I'll call the meeting to order if people could sit down and so that we can give courtesy to Representative Hornstein. Representative Hornstein, when we get a quorum, we will move your bill and your amendment. We cannot do the amendment until we have a quorum.
Okay.
But I understand that you have, is your amendment a delete all amendment?
It's just delete section one.
Okay, well then why don't you go ahead and start presenting your bill, and skip section one, and as soon as we get a quorum, the staff will let me know and we'll break in and move your bill.
Okay. Thank you.
People, could you take your conversations into the hallway? It's making a dull roar down here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. In the context, I'll explain the context of the amendment after the presentation, but I think that when there's more people here, because I think that's very, very important to this bill and some of the concerns that have been raised about it previously. So what I'd like to do prior to that is to introduce Catherine Jordan, who's the Executive Director of Achieve Minneapolis. And so the subject of this bill is to promote career and college counseling pilot program. And Achieve Minneapolis is already doing this in several high schools in Minneapolis with significant success. And so I'd like to have Ms. Jordan discuss the program that this bill is modeled after.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Welcome, Ms. Jordan. If you could restate your name for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Jordan. I'm the CEO of Achieve Minneapolis. And our mission at Achieve Minneapolis is to galvanize community resources to support student success in the Minneapolis public schools. We are a nonprofit intermediary organization that builds relationships and raises funds to reform efforts in public education. Yesterday we did pass out a hand that I don't know that you have it available to you. That would be it. And I'll direct your attention to a couple of charts as I go through this. Many of you heard our testimony last week, and we're facing a national crisis in preparing young people for high-wage and high-growth jobs. By all predictions, from Thomas Friedman's The World is Flat to the Minnesota Citizens League report to the Minnesota Department of Labor Statistics, we know that in the foreseeable future, we will not have enough trained and educated employees to fill the jobs left vacant by the retirement of the boomer generation. Achieve Minneapolis was asked by leaders in the Minneapolis business community to create a partnership to address the situation. With their investment of private dollars, we have been able to open 8 career and college centers in Minneapolis public high schools this year. Each is staffed by a professional who helps to coordinate internal and external resources to serve students. We are helping to build a delivery system that ties high school small learning communities and experiential learning together using a student-centered planning tool and connects to post-secondary options like MCTC's Power of You, so that many more students are empowered to fulfill their dreams for a productive future. We are using a community organizing approach to build on the existing resources of licensed school counselors, community-based organizations like Admission Possible, Project Success, and the TRIO programs, and we are attracting new resources like corporate employees and retirees and college students, so that we can serve all 10,000 Minneapolis high school students with up-to-date and relevant career and college information. And when I say career, I mean vocational, technical, professional, trades, and retail. And when I say college, I mean all secondary, post-secondary education, including the 2- and 4-year institutions. I want to share one example of how this is working. We also run for the City of Minneapolis a Step Up Jobs program. We're now in our 4th year, and our goal was to attract 1,000 students this year to apply for jobs that we recruit them from the business community. Because we are able to use the career and college centers to promote the program, to work with students on resumes and applications in our computer labs, and to provide a consistent message that there is meaningful employment waiting for those who step up, we received 1,600 applications this year, a 56% increase over last year's application pool. And we know from experience that students who participate in Step Up are more likely to see education as relevant and to graduate from high school more often than their peers. The House File 752 requests matching funds for a 3-year pilot project to test the model we have built and to create a research consortium that will measure its results as well as measure student progress statewide. We have formed great partnerships with scores of organizations and institutions of higher education to work on this urgent issue. If we can demonstrate that this private-public initiative is effective, we have an opportunity to be a national leader in changing the paradigm. Schools cannot do this alone. Educators, employers, and communities must learn how to work together if we hope to be prepared for the 21st century. There are some charts in the handout I gave you that shows you the kind of overview that we're trying to develop here from eventually middle school all the way to post-secondary and then on to our goal of having every student a productive member. And there's also a chart of all the various programs that we're working with. I'd now like to introduce Todd Klingel, who's the President and CEO of the Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce, who will speak on our behalf, and then followed by Cindy Chris from MinSCU. Thank you.
Thank you. We do have a quorum, but I think we'll do all the testimony and then move the bill. So, Mr. Klingel, thank you. Ms. Jordan, welcome, and if you could restate your name for the tape.
Thank you, Chair Garland, members of the committee. I am Todd Klingel, President of the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce. We represent over 1,300 businesses in the area. And I'm here to offer our strong support for this bill, creating a pilot program to provide career and post-secondary counseling services to students as a very positive step in addressing one of the most social and economic challenges we face in our state. That's underskilled, undereducated, and unprepared future workforce. The Chamber's purpose is to grow jobs. We face huge challenges in that area in the years ahead. Deed has told us that within 5 years, we may be hundreds of thousands of workers short for the jobs that our growth and retirees will generate. We need to have workers ready to fill those jobs that are in a position to do so. The most compelling of our strategies to address this challenge is the program we're undertaking currently with Achieve Minneapolis, the Career and College Initiative. We have a duty to our students and our members to provide these young people with appropriate options and guidance on how to achieve these goals. The Regional Chamber is firmly committed to the goals expressed in this legislation, both in words and in actions. To date, our members have contributed more than $500,000 to this program, and we intend to raise another $1 million to match your dollars in this effort. The business community knows that preparing our students for their future is good for our region and for the state. We put our money and our energy behind innovative and measurable ways to achieve this. Now we ask your help as well so that our young people may lead productive, useful, and fulfilling lives working here in Minnesota. We urge the committee and the full House to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Klingel. Ms. Chris, welcome and restate your name.
Good afternoon. I'm Cindy Chris, System Director for P16 Collaborations, the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And I just want to say that the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities value opportunities to partner in support of efforts to improve student preparations for and transitions into college and work. And to reiterate, based on comments that I've heard some of you make this week, when we say college, we're talking about all post-secondary, two-year technical colleges, community colleges, consolidated colleges, and state universities. And it's our belief that success is most likely when students have an array of options from which to choose in preparing for their futures. And in our experience, Achieve Minneapolis and its career and college centers offer a set of such options. And we've been really delighted already to have opportunities to work with the Minneapolis Public Schools, with the private sector, and with higher education on a model that we suspect will prove to be something that could well be replicated across the state. Just one more comment. We're particularly excited about the second section of this bill that would create a research consortium. We all know how important it is to collect and analyze data so that we can measure the impact of services and approaches like this one, and then target future resources, financial and personal, to those strategies that are the most effective. So we're pleased to work with Achieve and with Representative Hornstein on this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Chris. And now I will move House File 750. Oh, no, I'll call the meeting to order. And then I will move House File 752 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And then I'll move Amendment A1. And Representative Hornstein, do you want to explain the amendment? And then we'll vote on that, and then you can explain your bill. We're doing this a little backwards, members, because we did not have a quorum to begin with.
Representative Hornstein. Madam Chair, I actually have A3, but I don't know.
Oh, A3. I'm sorry. I'll move. I have it right in front of me, and I said A1, I guess. It seems like all amendments are all A1 in this committee.
Yeah.
I'll withdraw that other amendment and move the A1 amendment. Rest and you know, in Ways and Means Committee today, I voted against the money for education and the entire budget resolution. So this is, I had to quickly, everyone looked shocked, and I mean, yes. So now, I will withdraw that other A1 amendment, and I move the A3 amendment. That's important.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. This is actually a very important amendment. I want to just start discussing the bill with this. It deletes Section 1, and there were several provisions in Section 1 that many counselors, school counselors, were very concerned about. And you know, those, some of you who sit on the policy committee may have received some communication about that. I found out about these concerns fairly late in the process, the day before the hearing, as often happens. And we went to work immediately to try to allay those concerns. The purpose of this amendment is to ensure that the school counseling community is comfortable with this bill, and they are. And the most important provision, I think, in this amendment, well, there's several. One, they wanted to make sure that this was really just limited to Minneapolis, and so that's why we have the language in 11 through 14. We have some language in 21 and 26 that's different from the original bill, page 1, lines 21 and 26, which I think talks about this program working in a closer partnership with school counselors. Section paragraph 2 is very different because it talks about having a meeting with all the stakeholders prior to, you know, going into a school and developing a plan. That was important. But I think the most important language to them was lines 3-4 to 3-7, and that is to ensure that a licensed counselor is hired by the program. If the program succeeds in this bill and is able to raise money both from the state funds and, I will remind the committee, the 3-to-1 private matching funds. I'm not one of these people that really believes in the politics of scarcity, but I do believe in stretching the education dollar, and I think that's one of the things that attracted me to this program. And so this does two things. It says that there will be licensed counselors hired by the program, and that a third of the expenditures would go to those licensed counselors, which the net effect of which would be to increase the counseling staff at some of these sites, and that there will be, again, a collaborative process in hiring those counselors. So this really ended up being a win-win. A lot of compromises were made from the various sides, but I felt a little like Henry Kissinger doing the shuttle diplomacy, but wasn't quite Camp David, Madam Chair, but I think we do have at least a relative peace or calm about this bill, and I think it's too important a program to get caught up, I think, in some of these important kinds of divisions that took place, but I think everyone seems pleased with the final product. So just that the amendment is really important, and I guess I'd also call members' attention, again, I referred to it just a few minutes ago, to the appropriations, and it's very important to know that we do have
Rest and Hornsey, we're going to vote on the amendment go on to the rest of the bill. And minority members, take note, Rest and Hornstein did not get this amendment in on time yesterday, so his bill was bumped to today. So we're being fair with everybody's amendment rules. Rest and McFarland.
Yes, Madam Chair, and to the amendment. So are you talking about the same amount of money that you were before?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Rest and Hornstein.
Madam Chair and Representative McFarland, this amendment doesn't change the appropriations piece of the bill.
And Madam Chair,
Representative McFarland,
I guess what troubles me the most is that we've changed this from a statewide grant program to only Minneapolis. Is that right?
Representative Hornstein.
Well, I think initially it was envisioned that way, but again, I think there were concerns about the scope of this, and we have the relationships in Minneapolis to be able to address those concerns. And again, if it succeeds and continues to succeed to achieve Minneapolis, we'll certainly look at expanding it statewide. But that seems a little premature at this point, given the concerns that were raised.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm concerned because I think there are other partnerships happening throughout the state with Career and Tech, and I would hate to see them miss out on this opportunity.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, members, to that point, Representative McFaulin, although it does appear to be a statewide program, if you look at the original language, I don't think there's a school district that meets the eligibility criteria other than Minneapolis anyways. So, like Representative Hornstein's just being transparent and honest with us.
Which we always like. Well, any other discussion on the amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Hornstein, the rest of your bill.
I'll simply conclude by with 2 points. One, this is we have proven success as both of our all three of our testifiers mentioned. We have quantifiable and real world experience with this program, really adding some additional resources that are needed to connect students with jobs, to connect students with opportunities, to connect students with colleges. That's absolutely critical. I think it fits very well into some of our emphasis, I think, as a legislature this year on high schools. And so this fits into that that model. And then finally, I think that the fact that we have this match, it really is, we throw out this public-private partnership all the time, but this is really, truly one where we have state and private resources coming together for the betterment of all, and again, stretching the education dollar, getting more experts involved in interacting with our students, and again, really, I think, elevating and at least honoring and understanding the central role that licensed counselors play. And I'll just also finally say that Representative Peterson and I have been working on this together. We originally met together with Ms. Jordan way back before the legislature, I think even in 2006, before the legislature convened, and it's been great to have Representative Peterson's expertise, and I guess I'll just give her the last word. Co-authors, our co-equals in this.
Before we give her the last word and welcome Representative Peterson, is there any testimony from anyone in the audience? Representative Peterson, last word. Oh, excuse me. Too fast here. Mr. Graffel, welcome, and please restate
your name. Madam Chair, members, Jim Graffel, Minneapolis Public Schools. I wanted to just add this note that you've already seen the success of this program, the Colleges and Career Centers, when you saw Asha Mohammed testify on the ELL age issue. Asha Mohammed, using the College and Career Counseling Center at Washburn High School, applied to and was admitted at the Carlson School of Management, full ride, and that's where she'll be attending next year, thanks in large part to the College and Career Counseling Center at Washburn High School. So you've had direct experience with the success of the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Graffel. That's a nice closing word, but we'll still give one to Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I got involved with this originally because of Governor's Workforce Development Council, and they testified before us as part of my committee's work, and we found this to be a very systematic approach, a really good approach in a whole district to see that every single secondary school has that kind of career center, because we're finding that missing, quite frankly, around the state. And this was one which seemed to be working, ran into a couple glitches here in terms of talking about the counseling situation, and that's because of the shortage of counselors. But they have found a way here to work with the counselors in Minneapolis, and I am very enthusiastic about the idea that we have portfolios, that we start actually doing the mentoring, the job shadowing, all the things that will start kids thinking early on, as early as 7th grade, 6th grade even, about their careers and what they're going to do when they leave school, because that influences the courses they take and the kind of academic success that they will have in school. So with that, I am supportive of the project.
Thank you very much. We'll lay over House File 752 for possible inclusion down this bill. Representative Peterson, don't go anywhere. Your bill's up next. Thank you, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And all your
members. Testifiers. Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Peterson. Oh, wait. But while you're getting settled, we will approve the minutes. Representative Dietrich, if you want to move. Representative Dietrich moves approval of the minutes of March 15th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Representative Peterson, do you have a mover of your bill, or should I move your bill?
Would you please move it?
I'll move House File 443. This is just for information, come to think of it.
You're right, it is information.
This one, some of us heard last night in the Policy Committee, and the next two bills, and I believe one more coming up, we don't yet have. One was just heard as recently as half an hour ago. This committee appreciates a condensed version and not a million testifiers or minutes, because many of us have heard them already. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing about this bill, even though it isn't quite ready for final approval. But this deals with an alternative calendar for the school year. And I think it's a very exciting bill. I first got involved with alternative calendars in California about 15 years ago. And I was fascinated with the idea because I thought that it made a difference for kids. And teachers actually liked it. We've had a few experiments in this state over the past years, but nothing very substantive. However, a year ago, we had the opportunity to go down to Rochester and to visit their particular year-round school, alternative school. And I was so impressed. It's an elementary school, and it deals mostly with students at risk, Longfellow School, and the teachers were excited, the parents were excited, the kids were achieving, and they were doing great things. Because we all know, many of you are teachers in the classroom, and you know, particularly in the elementary grades, that huge expanse of time in the summer, those 3 months or 2.5 months that are there, are a real loss for many of our students, particularly those students at risk. And so this particular program continues, you know, with the 3 weeks off and then the weeks on, and it was very effective, and obviously they're making progress, they're successful, their students are achieving, and the parents are happy too because they are in school all year long. So this particular bill would provide the opportunity for school districts to develop an alternative school calendar. We don't specify how. There are suggestions in the bill about what that might look like, but it's up to a district to develop the kind of schedule they would want, and then to put $50,000 into grants. When we were in Rochester, we found that the main additional cost came from busing, transportation for those students. As we listened to testifiers last night, the other thing that seemed to have a cost factor would be the extended time in the interim, where they sometimes hire teachers or instructors to come in for those kids that were really having difficulty, and then they could bring them back for the interim. And sometimes they hired retired teachers to come in or substitutes to come in and work with the students, and did add some additional costs. That was in St. Paul with the program that they have there. We also heard from, was it Princeton? Cambridge. And they had a middle school. We heard from a St. Paul where they had an elementary school. And both of them very enthusiastic. One was a teacher, one was a principal. Each one as enthusiastic as the other about what was occurring not only in the school but with their students, and how the parents and students in those cities also were very excited about these programs. So we're suggesting that we maybe are past the day when all schools look alike, and that maybe, you know, just as in my district we have one Spanish immersion option for parents, we might have a year-round option for some parents and for some students who need that. And we need to be looking, I think, at a variety of alternative schedules that will meet the needs of students in particular, and particularly those students who are at risk. And
thank
with
you,
that,
Peterson. Mr. Kite.
Yes.
Dr. Kite.
I'll be very, very brief. We continue to think and want to move our schools to world-class status, and it's a difficult thing. We have full recognition of how tight money is to invest in the K-12 education system, but no matter how tight the money is, I think a few well-thought-out innovations where you can incent some schools to try doing things a little bit different is a good thing. This bill would allow enough schools to try this alternative calendar that we feel that in just a few years, you might actually find large numbers of schools starting to move towards a way that they set their school year up so that students learn better. So that's as much as I'll say for now, and we'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Pate. Are you Dr. Pate?
Yes, I am.
I thought so. Okay. Are there any questions? Any testimony from the audience for or against the bill?
Well, we do have the principal here that could speak to the
Okay,
same
why don't you
situation.
Bring the principal up and I...
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Celeste Party, and I am principal at Crossroads Elementary School, which is two schools in one complex, a Montessori and a science program, and both of them are year-round. We operate on a 45-day, 15-day program. We start at the beginning of the school year with all the other schools the day after Labor Day. We have a break in November, February, and in May. During those times, our teachers and students have a period of time off, but students who are below grade level or students whose parents have chosen that they want to attend can come to an intersession. And that it usually gives the child either 3 to 7 days off of vacation, and they're in school an additional 8 to 7 days. So if they attend all of our intersessions, they're in school an additional 23 days. And as they have spoken to, it isn't a slightly additional cost to hire additional teachers. We do use existing funds for our children who are below grade level for area learning money, and those children who are above grade level or exceed the grade level expectations, we have carved that money out of going for grants and just our regular general allocation. We have seen a lot of success. Parents do enjoy it. We are a citywide option. We have had a waiting list since we've opened. We've been open 8 years. We maintain a waiting list. We have 4-year-olds through sixth grade. We have seen children retention for our children. We are probably at a higher retention rate than most St. Paul schools. My staff turnover is at a higher staff retention rate than most St. Paul schools also. If you have any other questions, I think that it is a very valuable program, and my parents and my students and my staff really enjoy that year-round calendar.
Thank you very much. And I have not been to Rochester, but I have been to the one right near Cub on County Road B and near Rice Street, and I know people raved about it. Don't see any other questions, so thank you very much. Ms. Cardi and Representative Peterson, any final word?
The final word is Representative Zimmer has a very similar bill, and we're hoping to put those together because his deals with a 6-year evaluation process, and I think we ought to be evaluating and looking at what these schools do, and so we're going to try to marry those two bills in a very bipartisan manner. And we do hope that you will provide some grants because you do need some money as a little incentive. You've got to do some planning, obviously transportation. There are a few additional costs, and I think with a few grants, you'll get a few more of these started. The word will spread, and we will be able to start to implement more of these for students around the state. Thank you for hearing the bill. Thank you very
much. Thank you very, very much for sending for Representative Zimmer, whose bill is supposed to be up in 2 minutes, so he's obviously somewhere else. Representative Detmer.
Madam Chairman, I don't know how often we, as representatives, have family members here that come in to see you in action. My wife is here, Colleen, and our daughter, Crystal, and also my brother-in-law from Alaska, who's flew in. They came in to see me in action last committee, but we ran out of time, so we'll have to...
could we get them to stand up so we know they're embarrassed them properly? Thank you very much for being here. You have a wonderful relative. We're enjoying him a lot. And I think he's going to go out and be with his family instead of us right now. So, good choice.
Can I go?
No. Nobody else is excused. So you have to come up with a real family member to introduce her out. Okay. Well, I hate to start with Representative Dietrich's bill because that might be long. But is there anybody that has a short bill? Representative Enzel is perfect. We'll do yours. Some of us heard this one just like half an hour ago, but we'll definitely have your condensed version.
And this one, again, is not in our committee because it just came out of policy, so we won't need to move the bill, but we will have information about it. Representative Enzel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Information only. This is online learning. It's statewide. It is an idea and a concept and a issue brought to us by School Superintendent Dr. Don Langan from the International Falls School District. And we're working with all of the stakeholders, including the providers, the department, school superintendents, school boards, and Education Minnesota to make modest changes in the relationships between parents and kids, schools, providers, and it's my hope as as next week progresses, we'll have peace in the valley and we'll sing Kumbaya and we'll have very, very nice language that we can all agree to.
Thank you.
How's that?
That's perfect. Thank you, Representative Enzel. And as Representative Mariani could tell us all, and those of us who were here in the committee, we had some very good testimony, and this is definitely a work in progress, and it sounds like some of this brainchild did come from Superintendent Langan, and you are making use of your trip down here from International Falls on your horse, as you said this morning.
Can the superintendent have 1 minute?
Yes, we want to hear from you. Superintendent Langan.
Must have been something in my childhood, but I never did learn Kumbaya. I can appreciate the spirit of Representative Enzel's comments, and I think that, Madam Chair and Committee, that every effort's going to be made to try to reestablish some working, productive relationships amongst our partners as it applies to online learning, but more importantly, as it applies to our kids. I think this is a step in the right direction.
Thank you, Superintendent. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on the bill? Going to pass? Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Garofalo.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just Representative Ansel, is just something that I'm talking with other people about, and just I want to float this idea out there just for other people to know. I recognize that districts like yours that are in declining enrollment are losing revenue, and districts that I represent are growing, and I represent as well as you're probably in the same type of district, Representative Dietrich, you as well. And in these districts that are growing, there is a huge need or a huge demand from parents to have their kids being gifted and talented programs. And I thought, and it's an idea I've been bouncing around, and I'd love to work with you on, is I think this is a great way for rural districts, if they were sort of tap into that, to offer online programs targeted specifically at gifted and talented kids. I know under our current system it would actually be a revenue stream to those declining area districts, and it would really be a win-win where parents would be happy because they'd have a more diverse array of options specifically in the area of gifted and talented, because those parents are so active and so involved in their kids' education. And in the rural declining areas, it could provide a revenue stream to almost be a profit center, if the appropriate term, to offer programs to your students up there. Just something I'd be really I'd be willing to work on, my technology background and stuff. I think it's and from someone from an area like that, I think it'd be a pretty good idea. And I think whatever rural districts are doing that or can get that out there and target it to districts like mine, I think they do pretty well.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. And you know what? We have time to kill here while we're waiting for Representative Demers. So, Superintendent Langan, you're an interesting person. You're on. Anybody that wants to ask him any questions. Oh, you're saved by the bell. That's your bell.
Thank you.
Very
Thank
good.
You for your comment.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy travels back.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just a very quick.
Okay. Hold it. Representative Enzel, Superintendent Langan. Actually, Representative Benson does have
just
a question.
Just a quick statement to piggyback on Representative Garofalo's comment over there. I think it was about 1992 or 3, three colleagues and myself wrote a grant, and we got the equipment in order to offer to three adjoining school districts, advanced placement American history and advanced placement European history, and we had satellites in each of those, and it was a very cost-effective thing. I think when I raised the grant, it cost us at that time $10,000, which we got through a private, I don't remember who it was, gave us the money anymore, but somebody. And we ran that, and then we just passed off all our materials to the teachers in those three other districts, and that's how they started AP American in those three young districts. So I want to testify here that it does work, and it's a very cost-effective way to move forward. I think it'd just be terrific for schools that are finding it difficult to, you know, hire sufficient staff to expand their curriculum. It does work.
That sounded like another comment, but I think you can go home happy. It sounds like a lot of interest on this committee. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Demmer. You are the bell. And again, your bill, just like Representative Peterson's, was just heard, and so we don't have it before us. So we can't move it, but we will have it in consideration, and for today, we just have information.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that, and that's nice that we're just going to hear it. I think most everybody here was there last night, Madam Chair. Who wasn't? May I ask? Okay, so we have three or four. Okay.
Representative Demmer, there's always a few, and that's why we have to at least briefly rehear the bills. And I don't, you weren't here when Representative Peterson presented, but she said the two of you were going to work together as soon as possible and get us some common language.
Thank you. Madam Chair, House Bill 835 and Representative Peterson's, was it 443, are very similar. They're very similar. The concept, and I'll try to repeat what I said last night in summary. As we look at last year, I carried a bill that would have increased the length of the school year to 220 days on behalf of the School Boards Association. And that was really done as an informational type of an exercise, if you will, for us to start thinking about school year, length of school year, you know, how, you know, are we doing, how much time we spend in school? Do we want length of time, quality of time, length of day? All these things need to be considered as we as policymakers look at how we do education. Well, as Mr. Kite said last night, that was kind of the extreme version or the exploded version, and then they now have a more reasonable version, which was Representative Portman's bill. And this House File 835 is really as a result of seeing some other alternatives to a school calendar. My closest example of that is in Rochester, a district that I represent a part of. The Longfellow Elementary School is using a 45-15 calendar. There was a field trip there last summer. I think a number of department people came down. I think a few representatives came down, including Representative Peterson, I believe. And, of course, in conversation with Superintendent Williams there and with a teacher there that I happen to know, as well as with anecdotal evidence from parents and students, really, really enjoy the alternative calendar for lots of reasons. The bill talks about, well, for lots of reasons, let's just leave it at that. So that spurred me, Madam Chair and members, to consider not just the 45-15 calendar, but to back up as a policymaker and say, we need to look at school calendars, and I think we need to look at some sort of a structure within which we can encourage school districts to look at alternative calendars. And I'm always one that likes the people within the industry, in this case teachers, administrators, to come up with the ideas, because they're the ones that are in the trenches, they're the ones teaching every single day, they're the ones administering their schools every single day. They understand the pitfalls and the things that are happening within their schools better than we do here as legislators, even though we do have a wide range of current, former, and probably future teachers in our midst. So with that, I decided to do this legislation. Well, then, to make a long story short, I came to find out that the governor had a similar proposal in his bill. And so what I did is I talked with research and I talked with the governor's staff and I said, you know, this is exactly what I've been thinking about doing, and that's what House File 835 is. It basically is the governor's proposal. Representative Peterson had similar thoughts, similar ideas. The difference, primary difference between mine and Representative Peterson's is two. One is amount of money, which that'll be determined as we go through the, my bill calls for $2 million to be given to the, to be appropriated to the Commissioner of Education to be used to grant to provide grants to schools that come with alternative calendars based on a set of criteria. Representative Peters is, I believe, have $3 million, and that'll be determined by the omnibus bill anyway, Madam Chair. And
we probably like your bill better.
Well, well, it's a little lower, a little more modest, should we say it that way. And we did find out... I do have a testifier, too, so I'm going to really accelerate my comment.
All right, good.
What we're going to see, however, is that this is being done. These pilot programs are being... You know what? I'm going to cut short right now. I'll wrap up at the end, and we'll keep moving.
Thank you very much. Who is your testifier? Oh, she testified already, so you get enough. You get your final word unless there's any questions.
Well, then we're good to go. What I was going to say, Madam Chair, is that even though there's money appropriated here and we're trying to encourage some innovation, it's being done. The rules that we have do not preclude. They don't prevent schools from coming up with alternative calendars. We already have them. You heard about Principal Cardi, and you've heard about Rochester doing this. They're doing it up in Cambridge. We heard great testimony last night from the teacher, Mr. Hawkins. It's being done. And so what my bill encourages is based on a set of criteria, and it sets up a program where we can evaluate and look at it. As it's happening, we have some institutional history already with some of these schools that have been innovative in doing this. This sets up a framework within which the department and we as legislators can study some of the outputs and some of the outcomes we want from education. So, Madam Chair, you've heard the story. I think we're all on board with this. I'll stand for any questions if there are any. Otherwise, we'll conclude the informational hearing, and I look forward to the motion when it's in our possession to just move it through.
We will move it then. Thank you, Representative Demmer. Any testimony for or against from the audience? No one's on the list. We had a couple questions for Representative Peterson, if I can remember even at this moment. Otherwise, we will wait to move this bill, and thank you very much, Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do apologize. I would like to have been here for Representative Peterson's because we could have dovetailed, but I'm still in property taxes upstairs, too. So
you definitely know how.
And I need to be there, Madam Chair, because I really have a lot to learn about those tax things.
Well, go up there and do good work.
Well,
I didn't think of school property tax.
Well, and it doesn't hurt. Chair Lincheski is showing her bill, too, so it doesn't hurt to pay a little attention when she's talking.
Go for it.
Thank you.
Representative Norton. Representative Morrow, are you moving this bill?
Madam Chair, I do move House File 1698 for possible inclusion.
Representative Morrow moves House File 1698 for possible inclusion, and I understand you have an oral amendment.
I do, Madam Chair. This is just a quick clarifying amendment at lines 1.22. My amendment is to remove after the word progress the rest of line 1.22 and to insert the following four words: toward initial teaching licensure, so that line 1.22 will read, be making satisfactory progress toward initial teaching licensure, and then 1.23 remains in education.
Okay, Representative Morrow moves an oral amendment to House File 1698, line 1.22, after progress, striking the rest of the line and replacing it with toward initial teaching licensure. Any questions on that oral amendment? All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Representative Norton, welcome.
I was going to say good morning. It's afternoon. Good afternoon, Chair Greiling.
I'm having trouble today, too.
I'm going to move very quickly. I have some support behind me. If you want testifying, I can bring it. I know a number of you heard my testimony the other day, so I'll try to keep it short for you. House File 1698 provides appropriations to establish a scholar loan program to encourage talented college students of color to become teachers in early childhood, elementary, or secondary education. It has some provisions, which I'll just briefly highlight, one of which is a student must be a Minnesota resident and agree to teach at a Minnesota school district with a student color population of 15% or at least 15%, or with a school with a desegregation or integration plan approved by the Commissioner of Education. It also allocates that 10% of this fund, this amount that we allocate, will be to encourage students from two-year colleges to come into the teaching profession. Additionally, there's some 5% of the funds can be used for promotion and mentorship of these newly hired teachers. We do know that when teachers are in an elementary school, particularly it's a situation we found in Rochester, when we are successful in recruiting, these new teachers often need a mentor in the community to help them acclimate not only to the teaching profession because they're new teachers, but also to our community. So I think that's a very important provision of this bill. Just a couple pieces. You are all well educated in the area of education, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but as you know, Minneapolis has a 70% minority population. Rochester has almost a 27% minority population. Yet, even though we have policies on our books that encourages hiring of minority teachers, there is no pool. We have only 3% in my community, despite having a policy and an initiative that's been going for years. There just simply isn't a pool. This bill hopes to address that. And encourage more students of color to go into teaching so that there's a great pool of talented youth for us to hire. So that's very quickly the gist of the bill, and I am very appreciative of the amendment that was offered because the University of Minnesota called. They're very excited about this bill, as I believe the other committee heard from an urban initiative at Metro State. But there are some teachers who go back for second careers. And they may not have a teaching degree, but they may be going back to get a master's degree or higher-level licensure, and we don't want to exclude them from this initiative. So I would be happy to answer any questions and hope for your support.
Thank you very much, Representative Norton. Any questions? Representative McFarlin.
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, does this go to higher ed, too, or has it been there?
Representative McFarlin, it will be being laid over, but, you know, that was the question. That was what I was just actually mentioning to Ms. Patrick. It always is a mystery to me how things come here that, you know, could also go to higher ed. I think it's because we have a larger target, and you know, it's we have had I know the World Language Bill had a section for higher ed, and you know, all those kinds of things, and so that'll be our charge to look at how much of the K-12 budget do we want to put into higher ed, if any. That's always a dilemma. There's other committees are always trying to somehow relate to education in some way to get into our bill. It's understandable. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, to that point, when this program existed prior, although this is different language, probably better language, when it existed prior, we funded it through the K-12 funding stream.
And Representative Mariani, I'm carrying the Q bill, which is higher ed as well, so it gets very complicated. Any testimony for or against from the audience? Okay, very good. This one we did move, so House File 1698 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Norton.
Appreciate it.
Is Representative Liebling here? Here she is. Okay. Yeah. Welcome, Representative Liebling. Do you have anyone moving your bill?
No, I don't, Madam Chair.
Okay, then I will move House File 690 for possible inclusion, or 670, oh my goodness, 670 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome, and please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members, for hearing this bill. And this is my only opportunity to be in this committee this session, so I'm really pleased to be here and see all of you. This bill, basically what it does is it expands the definition of what a school district can do with its alternative facilities funding. And the problem that school districts have had, as you know, alternative facilities funding is basically to, in very simple terms, it replaces things that break. And it's a non-voter levy. And the problem has been that school districts are required right now to replace like things with like things. So, you know, just like if I had to go and buy a new furnace, my furnace breaks, I would try to buy the most up-to-date energy-efficient furnace, not the same one that I bought in 1980. But right now, school districts are more or less required to buy the same or as close to the same as they had before if they're using this kind of funding. And what this bill would do, it would do a couple of things. It would expand what they're able to do so that they can make energy conservation investments with this funding, so that they can use their limited funds to, in the most efficient way that will get them a more long-term savings. And it has a piece as well that requires them to go to the Department of Commerce and have a plan approved in order to do this kind of investment. And that has the benefit of really capturing the expertise of the Department of Commerce to help schools make these investments, because as I'm sure this committee knows, a lot of schools don't have this kind of expertise immediately available to them. So, and of course, I'm not an expert on either of these two pieces, so I have with me Cheryl Coria, who is from the Rochester School District, and she will give you some additional background and answer some questions. And I also have with me Jeremy Lefevre, who's from the Department of Commerce and can give some history and background on the Department of Commerce piece of this bill.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. And welcome, Ms. Coria. If you could restate your name and give us your testimony.
I'm Cheryl Coria, and I'm the Director of Business Services for the Rochester Public Schools. Rather feels like Rochester Day here. I was enjoying the testimony on our Longfellow 4515. I'm in complete agreement with all of the comments, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that Representative Liebling has made. This does pertain to the 21 school districts in Minnesota that have about 40% of the square footage of the state in the investment there. The need for this bill is linked largely to the like-with-like provisions of the current legislation. And so when we look at energy efficiency, if we looked at a boiler, we may have a boiler that's 80% efficient, but there's 96% efficiency available, because it does have some financial implication. And actually, we've looked, to give you a little bit of an idea, we are in the midst of completing our own building assessment right now. We're about 95% complete, but we believe that adding the energy efficient equipment to this may cost up to an additional 5% on that equipment. None of this is cutting edge. It's things that are very common in heating, ventilating, and air conditioning equipment. One of the words we use here is investment, and I just want to make it clear, probably because as a finance person I use the word investment, maybe improvement is better because there's something fancy really being talked about. The investment term comes about because we're able to get our money back on these in 4 or 5 years, and you actually have four samples that are pretty down home, pretty common, that were available and I believe passed out to you. So what happens is we're able to get our money back in 4 or 5 years, and then it leaves a legacy of cost savings to go into the classroom. I think you have a fiscal note on this, and it's probably, I know you have to value these things at their highest impact, but if you could consider this improvement or this investment, it is one that will bring money back to the classroom. I want to leave, I just have one other comment and want to leave time for your questions if you have them. It does require, as Representative Liebling indicated, an energy project study. And my view of that, this is the alternative facility comes in a pay-as-you-go levy as well as bonding. These are not voter approved, and so from a school district perspective, we would welcome the accountability of an energy study. These things are very basic, very straightforward, and we don't see that as an onerous provision at all. So, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Poirier. Anybody have questions? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom, can you tell me this levy authority, is it does it require voter approval right now or not?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, no, the alternative facility is not a voter approved levy.
Representative Garofalo.
And Representative Liebling, and it's unfortunate that you're the first person to come before the committee with increasing levy authority since the proposal that came out this morning. truth and transparency, Representative Liebling. Members of both sides of the aisle have come before this committee seeking this type of authority. However, this morning, what we witnessed in the Ways and Means Committee was that we need to be raising taxes, specifically income taxes, and that 100% of that is dedicated to property tax relief. help me reconcile that statement and that proposal with this legislation.
And before Representative Liebling answers that, of course, like you said, Representative Garofalo, a lot of members of both all around the table, as well as other members of, you know, both parties that aren't here, that have, we've heard previous bills of bringing have brought forward these requests. So I don't think it's fair to have Representative Liebling have everybody's requests on her shoulder, but having said that, I know she's a capable legislator, and I'm going to call on her to answer your question anyway. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I guess, Representative Garofalo, it really depends on how you look at things, because in this bill, what we're doing is allowing schools to make investments that are going to pay back in very short order and save the taxpayer money down the road. So, really, this is exactly the kind of thing that we should be doing. This is not levying for ongoing funding of any kind. This is making better use of levy authority that they already have, gives them a little bit more flexibility. In the fiscal note that I have here in front of me, I don't see that there's any, I guess this is the Senate fiscal note, but I know there is some expected impact on property taxes, but it's very modest, as I recall. This one doesn't have anything in it.
It does. It's a very modest one, but I will say this, Representative Garofalo. Our committee is getting for our levy target about $140 million in property tax relief, and it's under debate whether we're going to get any other levy target at all. And so, you know, everybody who has bills that ask for levy, I don't know if you're one of them, probably not, Representative Garofalo. He's probably innocent or he wouldn't be bringing this up. But, we all have to be careful going down a certain path. Some years, the Education Finance Committee gets a levy target. Some years, it does not. Next week, we're hearing Wednesday, we have a whole day of fund transfers. And some of those, many of those, maybe all of those, would be in some trouble if we don't get a levy target other than property tax relief. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, Representative Liebling, it's bad timing. It's not the legislation. It just happens to be you're the first bill that comes before this committee since the proposal came out. And I did say in my remarks that both sides of the aisle have been doing this. However, as far as I know, no one from my side is supporting the initiative that came forward today. And some historical context, Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, is I've been quiet about this the entire session, but we have constantly been reminded that the 2005 legislation that I voted for, and I believe you voted for, I don't know that, the Education Omnibus Bill, contained $143 million in discretionary levies that were given to local school districts. And for the greater part of a year and a half, myself and some of my friends have gotten the tar beat out of them for supporting that initiative. And on a personal level, one of the frustrating things that's for me is I was in the room. I was sitting in the room when Governor Pawlenty looked at then Senate Majority Leader Gene Johnson and said, if you don't want those property taxes in there, you just write me a letter telling me to take that out of the bill and I'll do it.
Representative Garofalo, I'm going to break in because I think we're off the topic of this bill. Let's have that conversation, but let's have it with me and the members of the committee. I don't think it's fair to have Representative Liebling take the brunt of this. I'm going to cut you off. Representative Demmer, are you on to that same topic, or did you want to talk about this bill?
It was on that topic, Madam Chair, okay, but it was kind of related to a comment Representative Liebling made.
I want your questions to be on the bill. We're not going to attack Representative Liebling for the whole DFL proposal. She's here with her bill, with her Rochester testifier.
We will
discuss this. I think it's worthwhile the discussion about the DFL proposal, and I want you, however, to have it with me.
Well, Madam Chair, I didn't have any kind of attack. I had a comment and an observation, but it is really on the other issue, so we could do it another
Let's
time.
Let's do that. Thank you so much, Representative Demmer.
And I would hope that...
Representative Garofalo, I did not call on you, so I'm going to call on... We're going to have this discussion, but not right now. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to discuss this, testify for or against this bill?
Madam Chair, if I could have Jeremy Lefevre come
up. Okay, and then we do have a question on this bill from Representative Benson. Welcome, Mr. Lefebvre.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jeremy DeFebvre, actually, with the Department of Commerce. But
okay, I'm sorry. Could you say it again?
Jeremy DeFebvre.
DeFebvre. Okay.
Yes.
Jeremy DeFebvre. Welcome to the committee, and it's good that you restated your name for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would like to just state that while the department is very supportive of energy efficiency, we are devoutly agnostic about the appropriate ways of doing school financing. So I'm simply here to sort of say that the portion of this proposal that relates to the department's work is something that we've looked at and certainly is within our capabilities, fits in with work that we have done with schools going back more than 20 years for a school loan program that began in law as 1983. And can answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to inquire of Representative Eden whether or not she could give some comfort to Representative Garofalo in the sense that if local districts, and by the way, I believe sincerely, in local districts.
Representative Benson.
I just want to.
Could I ask you, is yours on the bill, or are you back to the levy district?
No, I'm not. I just want to know whether we authorize this, whether there isn't a significant expenditure saving for the local districts if they make the investments you're suggesting.
Okay. Well, thank you.
On the bill, then. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Benson. Well, that is the very idea, and that's the reason that we want to have the Department of Commerce take a look at this and have an energy plan, because if there's not a significant payback, if there's not a short payback time, and I'm trying to remember now, is it, it's got to be at least no longer than a 10-year payback, and a lot of these projects, if the committee has the I don't know if the committee got this from the Rochester School District about some examples.
No, we did not, Representative Liebling.
Okay. Okay. Representative Benson has it.
No.
Most of these projects would be significantly shorter than 10 years. And we all know when we want to do an energy upgrade in our home or our business, we have to put out a little money in the beginning, but we do that only because we know that we're going to be paid back. And I'm sure all of you hear much more about this than I do here on this committee, but you know, there were proposals, for example, in the past about putting so much of the school's money into the classroom. And energy costs were part of what was being counted as not in the classroom. So therefore, when the school has no control over energy costs, just like we don't have it in our home unless we're able to do these kinds of upgrades. So this is one tool that we can give to schools to help them control their costs. If a dollar doesn't go out the window, it can be put into the classroom. So I think that this is really a win-win bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, we will lay over House File 1670 for, 670 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Representative Demmer.
Madam Chair, just as a comment, yes. I don't know if you noticed or not, I did sign on to this bill, and I think it's a good idea. So I just want to assure you that my comments were not going to be disparaging of this, but it was for some perspective. I'd be willing to offer that. If you can leave, I'd be willing to offer that now if you're open.
Representative Demmer, let's do that now, because otherwise it might get pent up. Representative could hardly wait. And so we'll let Representative Liebling and Mr. DeFebvre leave. This is still Rochester Day. Before you got here, one of the earlier testifiers said it felt like Rochester Day because there were so many Rochester bills. Maybe you were here for that part. So I'm going to call on, since it's still Rochester Day, if it's all right with you, Representative Garofalo, Representative Demmer first, and then Representative Garofalo. Representative Demmer.
Well, first of all, like I said, I do support the bill, and I think it's a great idea. It is a good investment. And I do have to point out, Madam Chair, I'm not from Rochester. I'm actually from Hayfield. I do represent part of Rochester, however, so in that vein, it could be part of Rochester Day. The comment that I wanted to make, I personally believe that whether it's a city, a county, a school district, I believe in giving them some control, and I'm not opposed to these sorts of levies that school districts can do, as well as cities and counties. What is sort of difficult, however, in getting back to maybe a comment that Representative Garofalo make, and that we've all maybe heard, and sometimes this gets into some politics too, There's not a distinction between increasing property taxes because of good investments versus increasing property taxes because of perceived shortfalls. That's not distinguished when people look at their tax bills, Madam Chair. When they see property tax increases, we get the credit and or blame either way. Mm-hmm. And the idea that somehow this particular levy, the taxpayers in general will understand that, well, that's an okay levy because it's an investment, whereas this property tax levy is something I'm going to beat up on my local legislator about, they don't make those distinctions. And I think as we consider the levies that have done in the past, as well as the levies that will come in the future, I think the taxpayers are going to say it's simply an increase in property taxes. It came from the locals who then talk about the fact that they need property tax increases because the state's not doing their share. We need to keep that in mind as we look at whether they're in good investment or bad investment. They all get pooled together when the taxpayers look at it, and quite frankly, when politicians talk about them.
Rep. Demmer, you're so right, and I think when we get done here and you really understand the DSL proposal, you'll support it. Representative Garofalo.
I look forward to the opportunity, Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo, I bet you will too, but you go right ahead here now.
I got $1,000, says Representative Demmer. I ain't going to support that.
I'm going to see you and raise it.
Chair, I would have some impact on that, and I'm open to elaborate.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, it was, and Representative Liebling, before you leave, I hope you didn't consider my comments as being attackful in nature, if that's even such a word. As attacking you.
You don't have to get into this.
It is unfortunate that of the levy bills that were before us, this one probably is the best one we've had. So it was just a case of bad timing. But I do think it's important to have that conversation that, again, I'm taking my cue from what was said in the Ways and Means Committee today, mm-hmm. that every nickel of the income tax increase is going to property tax relief. I believe that's what Majority Leader Sertich said. Mm-hmm. And within 5 hours of that statement, and again, we have members on both sides of the aisle doing this, we have pressure to raise property taxes to give that authority to local units of government. And the distinguishing characteristic I would make is that I and others are not supporting the new tier. We're not supporting the income tax increase. And that was the spirit and the context of my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. And I don't know how many of you had a chance to listen to the Ways and Means Committee this morning or not, but in case anybody didn't, what was proposed was an income tax increase on the fourth tier, and then every penny of that would go to property tax relief. And that is exactly, you're right about that. I would add that, and then local property taxes, of course, the governor and others don't count in the tally all the time, but this committee, we actually do. And Representative Garofalo is right about that as well. If we get a levy target and we're allowing local, we use the word allowing in here, which Representative Van Zels, as a local government official in a past life, like many of us here, really rail against that. But on the other hand, we do have to count that, because when we look at the price of government and other things here, then local property taxes count as well. And so if we don't have any kind of a levy target, then we'll keep that. We could also, you know, pay some regular money for some things. We'll just have to see what we decide to do, but it may limit Representative Liebling's bill's consideration and others if we don't have any other levy target. But I want to say, as long as I we're onto this topic, that in the last 4 years, Speaker Kelleher mentioned that property taxes have gone up almost $2 billion. Fees have gone up $1 billion, and then the cigarette tax or fee went up $400 million. And so, and then the governor's bill on autopilot with what we have right now would be another $500 million in property tax increase. And so, to, you know, with the debate, I think, that we will all have here at the legislature as we struggle with how to raise the money here is, will it be that income tax increase on the fourth tier, or will it be property taxes? It's not a question of no taxes, it's which tax, and that is going to be our discussion, but we're not the tax committee, so now we'll go on to Representative. We just want to spend the money and let them raise it. Representative Winkler. Representative Demmer, real quick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very quick. The one question I would have of the income tax, of the property tax increases and the things you talked about, it would be nice to see a breakdown of how many of those were done discretionary for investment purposes by local units of government, and how many of those were done because they had to because of state government. That would be the question, Madam Chair.
Representative Demmer, you can discuss these things with our staff, or you can go visit the tax committee. I know that you were earlier. You're on it. So you can get that information and bring that back to us for the next meeting and share it with us. That's your homework, Representative Demmer. Representative Winkler, welcome to the committee. Did you ask the member to move your bill, or should I do that?
Madam Chair, if you would.
I would move House File 988 and be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome, Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity to talk about a one-time state appropriation.
Representative Winkler, before you get started, yes. Staff just reminded me you have a delete all amendment, so let me move that for you. I take it you want that amendment moved,
yes,
right?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
So, members, it's the VE3 amendment, and I would move that for Representative Winkler. Is there any discussion on the DE amendment? This is the bill he wants before us. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment's adopted, and now we're working on the DE3 amendment. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm not really here to talk about technology today. I'm more interested in talking about what technology can do in the schools if it is applied in a meaningful way according to a common set of standards and is adequately funded. Technology can be a tool for accountability in the schools. We can talk, there's been a lot of discussion about online student assessments as a way to improve assessments, not just for measuring performance, but for making them a tool for classroom instruction. We have technology can improve the accounting and cost allocation system that school districts and the state use so that we can get better pair across school programs how money is being spent and where it's being spent most effectively. And technology can also be a tool to help districts dealing with issues of highly transient student populations by creating electronic student records. There are many opportunities for what could happen. We could create the world can be the classroom through online learning. We've talked a great deal about adding foreign language requirements for schools, and yet we still don't have resources in many rural districts to hire the teachers that we're talking about, and distance learning can be part of the solution to that. In many ways, we're preparing students for a 21st century economy using a 19th century classroom. And finally, education can be a tool for administrative efficiency through the development of shared services that can be used across the state and across the street, so that
they could really use it across the street.
In some ways, across the street might be better. So that districts can focus on their core mission of educating their students rather than each one maintaining their own separate accounting or billing system, for example. Problem is that right now in Minnesota we have a patchwork of technology funding and a patchwork of technology systems. There are inconsistencies not just across districts, but within districts and within schools. In fact, Education Week has given Minnesota the rating of D, as in David, for its use of technology in the school system. This bill does two things. One is to provide $100 million in technology grant. But in many ways, the more important thing, I think, is that it creates a statewide task force of stakeholders to establish technology standards, which those grants will help to fund. So the idea simply is to put the people in charge who are going to implement and who can envision this in charge of creating standards. We'll work with the Department of Education to ensure that there is an adequate rulemaking process, and we'll come back to the Capitol in a year to determine whether the task force standards are different from the departments. But the idea is that you put the people who are going to implement it in charge of creating the standards, and you have money on the other side to encourage them to go forward and work together. And I have two testifiers here. They're going to be brief, and they're both working technology, and I know they'll think I'm being harsh, but sometimes arguments over what technology to use or what standards to apply becomes more of a holy war than a rational discussion. And so the idea, obviously these gentlemen are not prone to that, but the idea is that we can incent people by having adequate funding on the other side of this task force and standards process to encourage collaboration and consensus on these issues. We need to incent the stakeholders, and frankly, in many ways, our public use of technology, public sector use of technology, lags behind the private sector, and many people would agree that investments in technology have driven productivity increases in our economy, and I think that kind of productivity increase in the school system is a place that we can invest money and receive some long-term benefits.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Is it Mr. Plant going first or Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Plant is all lined up.
Mr. Plant, welcome, and please restate your name.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Patrick Plant, the Director of Technology and Information Services from North Hennepin School District, and I'm also representing MEMO, the State Media and Technology Association. I mentioned a couple of other associations that are appropriate as I move through the testimony. As Representative Winkler has already spoken to, really, of course, the much more visible and important aspect of discussion of technology is what we want to achieve in using it. And that is things like statewide system improvements, like online science testing and ELL testing, or continued advancements in use of data to support more individualized learning, or IT literacy skill development for students to become more globally competitive. But in order to achieve that, there really are some things that we have to have in place as standards. And the three that I'm going to speak to is predictable funding, infrastructure, and then also secure and effective data sharing. Mr. Johnson, in a moment, will speak a little bit more about, again, what it really is all about in using and learning. The chart that you're looking at is actually a chart that was developed for internal use in Anoka Hennepin for planning purposes. And what it is it's an actual chart of how we paid for all of the computers that are currently in place and in use by Anoka Hennepin students. And what you'll see is it's a broad array of one-time funding sources that range from a voter-approved capital bond that we had our public support us with 12 years ago. And by the way, the 12-year-old computers, are about 8% of them are still in place. We have building and district capital. We have corporate donations. We have 11% coming from fundraising. And in essence, this view, it could be any cross-section of these one-time funds that is funding our buildings and currently how they're supplying access for students, and because of that, that access ranges from building to building, and I think you would find this representative of really the funding, how it works currently in the rest of the state. Some of the outcome of the lack of predictable funding that may be not as apparent, but is, of course, not having the funds in place makes it difficult to know if, for example, in a moment you'll see there are computers out there to do things like state online testing. Or another thing that the lack of being able to plan does is it doesn't allow us to buy computers as efficiently as we can. Because if we can forecast, and how we've demonstrated that is our MEMO organization worked first with the Office of Technology to create a program voluntarily where school districts work together to forecast and group buy. And in the first 18 months of that program a few years ago, we saved over $1.5 million above state contracts. That program turned into an all-public sector program, of which I'm the K-12 representative with the OET. And last year alone, just in desktop and laptop computers, we saved for public sector purchases, cities, counties, governmental units, schools, $21 million above state contracts. So we do know how to work together, and we do know that if we plan, we can work together to more effectively both buy things and deliver services. The second thing I'd like to show you is information that we put together in an informal survey of the impact of online testing on school districts. And basically, what this data represents is one-third of the student's population in response. And we simply asked districts to give feedback on a scale of 0 to 5, with 5 being the largest impact. How significant is online testing affecting you, and somewhat about what the barriers are. What we found was almost 90% of the response was that the concern was as high as it can get, almost between 4 and 5, for both equipment and staffing. And just some of the physical examples that we could tell you about the concern, in St. Paul School District, for example, they have 17,000 ELL students to test. And in order to do that, for 2 months. In some of their buildings, they're taking all of their computers out of their classrooms and putting them together into temporary labs to deliver the testing. A couple of other comments, specifically from districts, large and small. One said is we have sufficient labs for testing, but that means that instruction in those labs will not be available using technology for weeks. Or this will cause great disruption to computer classes, business classes, CAD classes. So that's the current impact of the lack of having that resource in place. The last area I'd like to speak to is the data standards. And there's a handout that I gave you that is an article from 2007 from Scholastic Administrator that gets into the standard that's called the School Interoperability Framework. And what that is that's on the front page, there's just a little bit of information about the organization, then the article that gets into the cost savings and efficiencies gained. The key is what CIFA is all about is a nonprofit organization of the federal government, state agencies, districts, and the vendor community working together to create standards to more effectively and securely share information. And you kind of say, well, you know, why? Well, if you look at the chart that I'm putting up right now, basically, and you could look at this at a school level, at a district level, what currently we have are lots of different applications, like a student information system, cafeteria, instructional applications, and they're not connected. And what that means is manually data has to be entered. The data that's essential to support learning to be integrated across the systems has to be manually compiled. And in fact, when I talk about the data, this is an actual graph of the data in education. This is the data model of all the systems that support a student's learning. And it doesn't even show the data if we were showing the content associated with learning. But it's all of this data that we need to bring together in an efficient way and share between districts. And what that standard, the School Interoperability Framework, is all about is allowing existing applications to be connected to do just that. Well, to give you a physical example of this, recently I heard a principal from Cooper High School testify, and just in student-related faxes at their high school, they received last year 52,000 faxes that have to be hand-processed, figure out how you're going to take that information, process it, and using it in a meaningful way. So, in other words, the more mobile a population in a given school district, the more critical this issue is. And one of the things we're proposing is the creation of a student record exchange so that we could share that information automatically between districts as students move. Finally, with this standard, I'm going to have to tell you it's sad to say that though this standard was actually born in Minnesota, now we're woefully behind other states in adopting it. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Plant. Mr. Johnson.
Committee Chair Garling and committee members, thanks for the opportunity to come and speak here. My name is Doug Johnson. I'm the Director of Media and Technology for Mankato Area Public Schools. Today, though, I really speak on behalf of Memo. I'm a past president of the Minnesota Educational Media Association and also a board member of the International Society for Technology and Education. So I speak on behalf of schools, both large and small schools that have money and schools that have less money. And this is one of the things that excites me about this bill is a chance to equalize the not just the funding but the opportunities for kids to use technology in meaningful ways within throughout the state. We are currently using online testing with our students twice a year. By the time the kids come out of the testing environment, out of the computer lab, the teacher knows where every child in her class is on every skill, at what performance level, and what that means is that she can then go back and offer individualized instruction to those kids based on where they're really at in terms of performance. So treating an entire class of 25 or 30 kids the same way, she can really diagnose and look at individuals. The thing is, though, that teacher needs materials and activities and resources that will help differentiate that instruction, and that's one of the things that technology provides. It's those reading programs, those interactive whiteboards, and those learning games that really do make sure that every child is reached. The second thing that technology does for our students in a very direct way is offer them opportunities they might not have, especially in our rural districts. For a district like Mankato, the technology provides the opportunity for some esoteric learning experiences like learning Arabic or learning Chinese. But for many of our rural districts, it may mean the chance of a student having the opportunity to take an AP class or an advanced math class or an advanced science class, not just Chinese or Arabic. And finally, the last thing the technology allows kids to do, of course, is to practice those skills that they're going to need to be productive workers and learners in the 21st century, the 21st century learning skills that that you know they're going to have to be creative, to solve problems, to do research, do information retrieval, and do decision-making and problem-solving. As Patrick, Representative Winkler alluded to a little bit earlier, Minnesota received a D in the last national report card on misuse of technology. When I came to this state in late 1980s, from being a teacher down in Iowa, I came in large part because Minnesota at that time had the reputation of being a leader in the use of educational technology. This was the home of MEC. This was the home of Plato Learning Systems. This was the home of Winnebago Library Software. I'd like to see Minnesota regain its national standing in the productive use of technology, but we can't do that until we at least catch up with the rest of the nation. So I appreciate your support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Don't see any members on the list at the moment. Are there any testifiers for or against the bill in the audience? Okay, one person, and that is it. Representative Winkler, it looks like you wanted to say something first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was remiss to mention this before, but I did have an online learning amendment that was brought to me somewhat late. You don't have it. And I could offer part of it as an oral amendment, but I'm wondering if you could just advise the way you would prefer to address it.
And you're right. I added my notes to be sure to remember to ask you. It said small word changes. Now, yesterday we got into trouble with Representative Norton, who had small word changes, but they were so big, we decided to not do them. So I will. I don't know how complicated yours is. You heard the one, I don't know if you did, but Representative Morrow introduced one for Representative Norton that I considered short. So if yours is something on that order, we can try it, and if it starts to get too snarly, I will go gone. So why don't you try it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to read your body language for when I might be getting close to that. The first would be under the technology grants.
Why don't you give us the numbers that run down the side of the amendment? If you say one, we'll know you're on page one.
Page two.
Page two. Line.
Line 20.
Page, so it would be 2.1, okay.
And I would add
2.20.
2.0, yes. I would add a number 13.
Okay. Winkler, where are you adding a line? Now it says Commissioner by the President.
I would insert a new number 13 after number 12.
Oh, got it. Okay. A new number 13, okay.
And the language would be one member from a list of technology experts submitted to the Commissioner.
Okay, hold it. One member from a list of technology experts. Oh, just like the other language. Yep. Submitted to the Commissioner. Okay.
By the Online Advisory Council.
Is this the only amendment you have?
Unfortunately, it's not.
Okay. Let me just repeat that one then. And I'm going to ask the clerk to repeat it after I've repeated it once. So on line 220, after line 220, we insert a new 13. One member from a list of technology experts submitted to the commissioner by the Online Advisory Council, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We have that one. And next time we repeat it, I'm going to have the clerk do it. Okay. Representative Winkler.
And then, Madam Chair, members, if you would go to page 4, line 26.
Page 4, line 26.
And insert a new number 5.
A new number 5.
And I have language here. I don't know. Maybe I could just hand it to the clerk and he could read it. Or do you want me, or does it have to be right into the page?
Let's do that, Representative Winkler. Yes. Could you, one of the pages, could you bring the new language up to Ms. Mandelman? And we will, do you still have a copy of it, Representative Winkler?
I don't, but I'm.
Okay. I am going to move, and that deals with the only two parts, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I will move an oral amendment to Amendment DE3 for Representative Winkler. The first section is on right after line 220, a new line, a new number 13, and I'll wait till we make sure the clerk has it. So you can just that, and then the other oral amendment, and then we'll see if anyone has questions.
Okay.
This is first the new number 13 after line 220.
One member from a list of technology experts submitted to the commissioner by the Online Advisory Council.
Okay, and then the second one?
And this is number 5?
It's after line 4.26. And it will be number 5. And what does that say?
Design a statewide system to facilitate coordination of supplemental online learning between online providers and local school districts involving stakeholders in the design process.
Any questions on the amendment? Okay.
Is there more? There's more.
Okay, keep reading.
Madam Chair, we're doing the best we can.
Okay. And by the way, members, the reason, while Ms. Mandelman gets situated to read it, the reason we have Representative Winkler's bill here, he did have it slated on Technology Day. He's had this bill in for a long time. You will even notice his delete all amendment is dated February 27th, but he was ill that day. And so that's why we're having it out of sync with the other major technology bills. But this one was in on time. We would have heard it then had it not been for illness. He spared us spreading germs around, so we appreciated it. Ms. Mandelman, the rest.
Okay. This is after 4.34, and it's number 1, and it is coordination of supplemental online learning between online providers and local school districts.
All right. Any questions?
No, there's more. Number 2, student support system. Number 3, development of a digital learning object repository. Number 4, training programs for online instruction. And then the ones that were 1 through 4 are renumbered, 5, 6, 7, and 8.
Okay.
And then fiscal staff also handed me something.
That needs to be changed?
Yes.
I sense that gong.
Yes, the gong is coming.
Boy,
you know what? I think we're going to skip the amendment, and why don't you get that written up with staff so that we have it for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. You could get us the amendment.
That would be fine.
I think members are going to be confused about this otherwise. So, all right. And with that, then, did you have anything else to say? Because there was a testifier.
No.
Okay. If you could come forward, please. Thank you to the testifiers we just had, Mr. Plant and Mr. Johnson.
Thank you.
Welcome, and please give your name.
My name is Lisa Finsmith, and there are women technology directors as well.
We're glad to hear that.
I work on the Director for Instructional Technology for the Osceola School District, which you know has over 22,000 students. And Mr. Winkler doesn't know me. I'm a colleague of the gentleman who spoke. And I want to lend my support to what they said and acknowledge that what they said is absolutely on the mark. We do need stable funding. I also want to put a word in for the amendments that you just made, because I'm also a member of the Northern Star Online Advisory Council. And that idea of, as this guy's name over here,
Representative Garofalo.
Yes, the idea that you, your paperwork is covering your name. And I didn't have it memorized. But the idea that you mentioned for the need to for online learning, that idea of a collaborative umbrella is very much needed to support online learning. So I'd like to strongly you to consider everything in this bill is important and in order for us to move forward. So there's another face here for memo, another face for online learning, and thank you for all the good work that you do.
Thank you, Ms. Fitness. And we're very glad, all of us who have daughters or support young women, that women are interested in technology as well. We call him that guy, too.
My wife does, too.
Okay. That was just the testimony. I don't see any questions. So thank you, Representative Winkler. You will get us that amendment. And in the meanwhile, House File 988 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Representative Dietrich. We've seen Commissioner Segrin in the audience, and we kind of suspected she might be here for this bill. So welcome to you as well. Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. It is my impression that we are not going to move this bill.
This is, right, Representative Dietrich, yes, this is information only. Thank you. This is another one that we did not have the time turnaround fast enough from policy to actually move it at this time. We'll have to have a succession of moving bills next week.
Okay, and in that vein, then we will not be moving the amendment, and I did want to just talk a little bit to the amendment. Shannon, you're looking at me. you have the amendment in your packets, but we won't be moving it, but what it does is it changes all the references to 3 R's in the bill to 4 R's, and that would include the word relationships. And it also makes a couple of other technical changes. The one that I would really like to highlight, though, is that it speaks to the implementation, and the implementation is effective 2014 for the concurrent enrollment program, and that would mean today's fourth graders. So I am going to go ahead and describe the bill, if that's okay with you, Madam Chair.
Please, yes, go ahead, Representative Dietrich.
Okay. The 4 R's high school proposal has partially evolved from the discussions that high school principals and others have been having around the country for quite some time. They have recognized the challenges that we as a state face in preparing our high school graduates for the workplace of the 21st century. Before I move on to the bill, I want to just highlight some of the challenges that high school principals and others throughout the state have recognized before this bill. First of all, our high schools were designed at a time when the majority of our graduates did not go to college. The majority of high school graduates need to pursue or want to pursue some type of post-secondary opportunity. In a recent study by Achieve, Inc., they found that only 24% of the high school graduates say they were significantly challenged in high school. The economic forecasts project a 20 to 33% increase in scientific, technical occupations in Minnesota in the next 10 years. Also, a new job growth in professional and high-tech industries in Minnesota will demand an extra 10,500 college graduates per year. One-third of our high school graduates need remediation in math. Given these critical challenges, I believe that it is now the role of the state to provide the support for our high schools to help them face the challenges of the future. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the bill. House File 1888 includes financial resources. That is one of the first questions, so I'll cover that right away. In the first year of implementation, the high schools would receive $68 per student as in the planning year. The second year, $200 per student,
and that would be called the implementation year. And that would be a total of $75 million. And that is enough for all high school, for all high schools to participate in the 4Rs program. House File 1888 also provides a statewide framework to improve our high schools. It includes 4Rs: rigor plus relevance plus relationships will equal results. Under the 4Rs plan, there are 6 components. All high schools are required to provide the first component, and that is 1 year of post-secondary education for all students. And as I mentioned before, that would be beginning with today's fourth graders. The programs that meet this requirement are on page 1 of the bill. And if you want to look at those, they begin on line 16 and continue on to page 2. Many of our high schools, and as you peruse that list, you will notice that many of our high schools already provide many of these rigorous learning opportunities. And with those, they are experiencing much success. We want to take this success to the next level and expand these programs for all kids in all high schools. Many of the high schools throughout the state have already begun that planning process and are well on their way to developing 4R plans. And in your packets, you should have a list of high schools that already have some sort of a modification of this. Mm-hmm. Next, the second component is the College Access Program. That begins in ninth grade to help students and their families determine the interest in post-secondary education and employment. Third is a personal graduation plan, which would be designed to bring a greater sense of relevance to the high school coursework. Each student would create a 6-year roadmap to graduating and to their post-secondary experience. They would do this with the support of parents, guidance counselors, teachers, and the list could go on. It could be business people, mentors, all sorts of people. I was able to go to Central High School and look and see what they are using. They are already using an interactive software called Live Tomorrow, What You Dream Today. And they are using that to the extent that they can, but I think that they welcome something like this that would help them expand and strengthen what they are already doing. And then when I look at the presentation for Achieve today, I see that I feel like that just melds right into this also. So once again, the point being is that there are many high schools already out there exploring some of these options. The fourth component is high-quality teachers and school leadership. The fifth component is rigorous and relevant course-taking for all students in all high schools. The sixth component is the use of data for school improvement. I'm not going to go on any further. What I would like to do now is turn this over to 2 testifiers who are actually in high schools today using this type of using a modification of this type of model in their high schools. And I'll call on Ginny Karbowski first, director of the Anoka Hennepin STEP program.
Welcome, Ms. Karbowski. First, I thought you were going to turn to Commissioner Segrin, that she's become a high school teacher, too, amongst all her other talents. Ms. Karbowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ginny Karbowski, and I am Director of Current Technical Education with the Anoka-Hennepin School District. I'm also Principal of STEP, which stands for Secondary Technical Education Program, and I believe you received the brochure that I brought down today for you to get an idea on what our program is about. Today we had about 900 11th and 12th grade students at our school, and they were enrolled in various different programs, taking classes in aerospace technology, welding technology, anatomy and physiology, emergency medical careers. The list could go on and on. It's 20 different career programs. We also had some students that were there taking their required English, math, science, and social studies. We are a program that is matched with Anoka Technical College introductory courses, along with many other Minnesota State Colleges and University colleges. For example, we are connected with the Alexandria Technical College in the law enforcement program. 100% of our programs match a college entry-level course. And our students have the opportunity not only to earn high school elective credit, but also college credit at the same time. We are talking about students that could possibly be in advanced placement or in a college in the schools at their home high school, but probably more so, they aren't. They're probably that kind of student that is a hands-on learner, that doesn't always learn best in the classroom, but rather by doing. And so one of the things that we find and we hear often from our students is they're very excited about learning, and they find our courses challenging. I want to just give a couple quotes on our program from our students, and then I will turn it over to my colleague on the left. When they talk about STEP, STEP classes are a challenge, but they are well worth it. The structure of my class has prepared me for future endeavors. Second comment, the reason I enrolled in STEP is because I thought I was ready for college. At STEP, they count on you acting like an adult. And finally, it's a really fun place to meet people from other schools and learn about a career in your area at the same time. I think one of the things that we found is that our students do get re-engaged in learning. They're excited about their programs. They're proud that they are earning college credit. And we have received a lot of positive comments both from students and parents. We're 5 years old, and I think at this point we feel that this is a great model and something to be looking at. So we truly do support what is included in House File 1888. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Karbowski. Ms. Belfry, please state your name and welcome.
Thank you. I'm Debbie Belfry, and I'm the Career Development Coordinator for Bloomington Schools. I appreciate this opportunity to talk about the opportunities that this bill would provide for our Bloomington School students and students across the state. This would help provide learning experiences and resources to encourage and stimulate educational endeavors. We have a unique program at Bloomington Kennedy High School right now where our students actually build a chopper, a motorcycle, and it is integrated into computer manufacturing. It is using CAD technology, and when they finish this, it has to meet the requirements of a motorcycle that could be on the road. So through industry, they have to be certified to not only build this, but build it properly. And to do that, they work with a variety of resources in industry and businesses, and those people, through that relationship, have helped contribute to the students' education. It's a unique program. It's different when we say that we're building a chopper. This is the third year. They also take that chopper to a program called the Donnie Smith Invitational in St. Paul. They'll be taking their third motorcycle there in just a couple of weeks, and they compete against people in the industry and have won awards for their chopper. So that's one unique way of looking at this. Those interrelated resources help adults and students' lives. That's a relationship part of this whole program. It encourages the creation of meaningful educational and career opportunities to promote success in the competitive global market. We also provide industry certifications in our family consumer science courses, and are working right now to take a certification in the hospitality industry, which very well tailors to the city of Bloomington and Bloomington School students, along with a partnership with Normandale Community College. And so we're starting to go down that road to take our students from a high school program with certification into a Normandale Community College program for a degree in the hospitality industry. We're incorporating academic knowledge and skills for all learners, all levels of learners. There are quite a few students, by the way, in AP that are working on our chopper at Kennedy High School. Our rigor is embedded in a variety of different curricular programs, and those programs are surrounded by standards, assessments, program outcomes, and taught by highly qualified licensed teachers. The relevance comes in a variety of different ways, each course and each class providing a different way that we're providing relevance and working with people in our community to help students achieve. The results are tremendous. We see a lot of results through student organizations, SkillsUSA, HOSA, DECA, BPA, many of you are familiar with those, and also through academic competitive competitions like Science Olympiad. So all of these things put this opportunity around students to move from secondary to post-secondary opportunities and with high level of skills and college credits moving into the workplace. The results of this are engaging students in their full educational potential, develops leadership abilities, and in the future contribute to their communities. In Bloomington, we believe that we need to find connective pathways at transition points for middle school, high school, post-secondary. Practically, the way our pre-engineering program that offers the students an opportunity to earn college credit in high school after they've completed those courses is a program that shows how we collaborate really in a middle school, secondary, high school, and post-secondary program. And we would support this because it continues to expand and engage students in very academic abilities and career interests. It provides greater opportunities to achieve their goals toward career and college readiness through relevant curricular applications. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Belfry. Representative Dabney.
Thank you. Ms. Belfry, sounds like some great stuff. A million years ago, I subbed quite a bit at Kennedy, and I've got a real soft spot for it. The CHOPPER program, I've read about it in the paper over the last several years. Is that a college credit? The students receive college credit for participating in that project.
It isn't at this time, but what we're doing, excuse me, it isn't at this time, but what we're doing is now working on incorporating, we already have standards in the course, all career and technical education courses must have standards. And taking those standards to find manufacturing programs that we will align with. And because it's a relatively, they're in their third year, we will take those opportunities now to find and work on developing relationships in manufacturing programs on the post-secondary level.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So at Kennedy, or in the Bloomington School, because I'm sure you're doing good things at Jefferson too.
Yes, we
are. You're able to work on finding developing relevant educational opportunities for all learners without this mandate.
Ms. Belfry.
Thank you. We are starting to get there. We have taken some initiatives. This program actually started as an after-school program. It wasn't in the school day. We're trying to move it that direction. It's providing different challenges for students to be able to take the time to do that, which this is challenging for any student to fit one more thing into their day. So we are just starting to work down that road. What this would do, too, is continue to move us down that road of engaging all these learners and to help transition to post-secondary. Those relationships still have to be developed. The curriculums have to be aligned. And the one thing we don't want to do is have students repeat curriculum. So the process of taking each and every course and starting to align it with post-secondary education is going to take time, effort, the development of relationships, and not just with the post-secondary institutions, but businesses also.
Thank you.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to follow up in part on Representative Dabney and also in some ways take a point of personal privilege, if you will, in that the St. Peter's schools are also 3R schools, greater relevance and relationships, and to show also the success in that sense, St. Peter this year founded it both as the Minnesota Secondary School Principal of the Year, and we just learned this week, that St. Peter has the outstanding new superintendent in the state, the K.E. Jacobs Award. So you're right that on our own we were able to take this initiative through the help of the Lighthouse Program.
Commissioner Segrin, some more highlight schools to add to your list. Commissioner Segrin.
Representative Morrow mentioned that St. Peter was a beneficiary of a Lighthouse grant from our MGA Honors grant. And that's the point I want to make, too, that I think what Ms. Belfry is saying is the fact that we like to build capacity in all of our high schools and actually grow these programs so that they're even more robust for all of our students. We'd like to grow the programs in Bloomington. We'd like to grow the ones and actually replicate the kinds of opportunities that Anoka Hennepin has received. And they were the beneficiary, actually, of some special funding that actually got that going. So we want to make sure that all of our schools are able to do that and build capacity and grow these. We have a lot of programs. Project Lead the Way. Project Lead the Way has been actually funded by the Kern Foundation for the most part. And so unless you are the beneficiary of a special grant, you don't necessarily have that program. So this money, the proposal for that the governor is proposing is to actually provide capacity for every high school to do those kinds of things. And it's ongoing money. It won't go away after 2 years, and it will allow us to build that capacity so that for the school districts that haven't started to pursue this, we'll be able to do that.
Very good. All right. Is there any public testimony for or against this bill? Mr. Nathan.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Nathan, and I've been suitably advised that it's Friday afternoon, so I'll be brief. I want to support this for three basic reasons. First, because I think that the governor and the commissioner are absolutely right that we need to do a better job with significant numbers of kids, and that it's not just inner-city kids. In fact, I want to present some data to suggest that some of the Minneapolis and St. Paul schools are doing an extraordinary job. Public schools are doing an extraordinary job, and that there is fascinating data about the high schools that have the lowest percentages of kids who are taking remedial courses. What's going around is a study that was done by the University of Minnesota and the state college system, and each of you will be able to look up the high schools in your own district. What this shows, for example, we just heard about St. Peter's, so I want to refer you to page 35. And what we see on page 35, if you look in the first column, is that you'll see that St. Peter graduated with 47% of the students. This is page 35. That 47% of the students who graduated from high school 2000 to 2003, 47% of them went to a public college or university. And then 27% of those students, that is to say 27% of the students who went to a public college or university, took a remedial course. We've done some analysis of this study that shows that the 50 high schools with the smallest percentages of kids taking remedial courses in public colleges and universities in this state are all rural. All rural. And Mr. Dabney and I have talked about a number of issues in the last 48 hours. I want to point out to Mr. Dabney and members of the committee that some of the high schools in Minneapolis are actually doing a better job in this area than some of the suburban schools. And that's a story that doesn't often get told, but I think it's an important story for this and other groups of people to hear. If you look at Roosevelt, they have a very high percentage of kids going on to college. If you look at several of the Minneapolis district schools, they have a lower percentage of kids needing to take remedial courses. And so I just want to give this last example and say I think that the governor is absolutely right and the commissioner are absolutely right that we are doing a marvelous job with some kids. And our three children, I would count in that group. They went through K through 12, all in public education. But if we look in here on page 29, and I apologize for the unfortunate way that this was stapled today. But if you look on page 29, you'll see, looking, for example, at Southwest High School, that 40% of the kids in 2000-2003 went on to a public college or university, and 41% of those kids took remedial courses. But if you look at Rosemont, for example, and if you look at Light Bear, for example, and if you look at some of the suburbs, you will see that some of the suburbs had higher percentages of kids having to take remedial courses. So sometimes people present the notion that we have a huge achievement gap, and that's the central problem in Minnesota public education. This is my last sentence. We have a broader issue, and that is exactly what the commissioner and the governor are saying. We have to have challenging, interesting courses. They might be as a part of a vocational program. They might be as a part of AP or IB. This is not just about going to traditional four-year colleges, but we need to provide incentives to our high schools and to our kids to take these kinds of challenging courses. And I want to thank you for giving me the chance to talk with you today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nathan. Mr. Campbell, are you waiting to testify? Okay, you're on. Welcome.
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Dan Campo, and I represent the Minnesota School Counselors. I'll be relatively brief. While school counselors are always excited about any kind of program that offers tools and access that help Minnesota students, we found that the way that this bill is written, we're not in support of it. And the basic reason, and again, trying to sum this up, as I look down through the bill, there is a privatization issue which MSCA does not support, lines 2.9 through 2.11. However, if you look at lines 2.13, and I'll just kind of go through it relatively quickly, when we talk about a school counselor, we're licensed school counselors. That's master's degree school counselors. They have experience not only in the things that you've heard other representatives like Representative Tilbury speak about and many other people as far as the social and personal social skills, but there is an enormous portion of what they do that is actually the academic guidance part. And so one of the problems school counselors face is that because they have a very broad scope of, let's say, practice, we're trying to always lump them into one thing or another. And the things that this bill offers are things like college admission and financial aid counseling, tutoring, career guidance, ongoing support, and I'm reading down from line 2.13, graduation plans on 2.19, exploring career options 2.20, identifying students' academic and career goals 2.23, and 2.26, monitoring the progress. I could go on, but basically this is an essential part of what our Minnesota school counselors do. And so I'm not quite sure, as written, what I see here is basically an attempt to recreate part of the problem that, to solve part of the problem that we have in the state of Minnesota, which is that Minnesota school counselors are ranked 50th in the nation as far as their student to counselor ratios, as you all are aware. And so we feel that this is putting a Band-Aid on it, not putting the right Band-Aid on the problem, as opposed to hiring more school counselors and taking a look at more a focus of the school counselors as being a hub in the wheel and spoke in the wheel, maybe being some alternative plans that we feel that this bill is trying to get at. So in concept, the idea of more additional plans being spoke on the wheel, we're all in favor of that, but looking at it as the counselor being the hub, and we don't feel that this quite addresses it due to the shortages we have.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. I was thinking, because it was now 4 hours, you were coming up to testify against it. I missed this last night because I was in another committee, so you may have testified there, and others were not surprised that I was. Is this section that the counselors do not support similar to Representative Hornstein's unamended bill, or is this different even from that?
That's correct. It's very similar in the way it's drafted, yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Well, we got that one solved, so maybe we can take a look at that.
That's what we're hoping. We're confident that the author is willing to work with us, and that just as written, there's some other things that
we're going to do. Thank you, Mr. Campo. Commissioner Segrin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to mention that Representative Dietrich had presented an informational amendment to the bill, which does address Mr. Campo's concerns. In fact, we had a meeting with Mr. Campo and the counselors in my office, and I had told him that we were going to be doing an amendment. The amendment does say after the funds... on your amendment lines 110 and 111, it talks about after doing a change from 3R to 4R, and after must insert use the funds to provide pupil support services or. And so we wanted to make sure that we were expressing, and I gave the counselors the assurances that we indeed want them to be the hub, and then all of these other things would be the spoke. And so Representative Dietrich has amended that to reflect the discussion that we had in my office, so that we are very clear that we are not trying to privatize the counseling system at all in the state of Minnesota, that they are a very integral part of what we want to do here, and that having support services such as counselors and other kinds of college access programs are very, very important. We want to have that opportunity for students and for school districts to provide the plans. We talked about how counselors could help provide the guidance to, you know, some of the college access summer activities, camps, after-school programs, those kinds of things that we could also create together. So I hope that that does address the counselors.
Mr. Campbell, if we could, thank you, Commissioner Segrin. Mr. Campbell, could you come back up, and I don't know if you were there last night or not to know that the bill was amended. Were you speaking to the unamended bill or the amended bill? Mr. Campbell.
Even as the bill is amended, it still doesn't quite go as far as the MSCA is comfortable. So.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Anyone else who wishes to testify for or against the bill? Any more questions from members? All right. Thank you all very, very much. Last word, Representative Dietrich.
Yes, I would like to have just one last word, Madam Chair. And it's a personal experience. Many of you know I'm my husband and I are parents of three boys, and our oldest is now a senior. My husband and I, when we first started down the path of raising our children, we thought that we would be very qualified to help our children transition into the post-secondary experience. We're both college educated. We've both been around the block a few times, many different careers, you know. And now that our oldest is a senior, we both are feeling very ill-prepared to help. And as you know, I've talked about it many times, we have very large high schools in our school district. And I think that there is just room for improvement. And if my husband and I are struggling with this process a little bit, I can't even imagine what some other people are feeling like when their children get to this level. And so I think that this bill really does address that, and it's through the four R's, and it really provides a support system to help schools bring what they're already doing very well to the next level. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Dietrich, Commissioner Segrin, and the other testifiers. House File 1888 will be laid over. Or no, it's just informational. We can't do anything with that. I can't get a single motion right today. Representative Loeffler. Let me see now. Do we have this one?
Yeah.
But what about this one? She has subcommittee report?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Before we do this, then, Representative Dominguez, would you like to move adoption of your subcommittee report for Representative Loeffler's bill, House File 1082?
So moved.
All right. Representative Dominguez moves that we adopt the subcommittee report for House File 1082. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The report is adopted. And Representative Dominguez, would you like to move Representative Loeffler's bill?
I would move House File 1082.
Representative Dominguez moves House File 1082, which is now before us. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, thank you for your patience and a long day. I really wish I'd brought my testifiers here because they were just wonderfully entertaining, and I think as you do your work, you need to hear those heartwarming stories and see the pictures of the kids to remember why you're here. But I know you have them in your heart. What this bill does is allows the school districts that had up until 2003 operated pre-kindergarten programs for four-year-olds, particularly those with developmental delays or other challenges that would need a little extra attention, to have them have the kind of a success that we want for all children in kindergarten. And I think those programs started in the urban schools, and as other schools heard about the value of early childhood education and pre-kindergarten programs, they sort of mushroomed around, and they were under our basic aid formula, and they were growing rapidly, and I think in a cost-cutting, budget-slashing tradition that we seem to have around here, some good things fall by the wayside. And in December of 2003, the Department of Education decided that they would no longer be eligible for aid. And what this bill would do is allow those school districts that have had those programs to reestablish them with levy authority. You, I hope, will have heard or will hear Representative Sandra Peterson's bill that actually does it with aid. We prefer aid, but if the state isn't able to step up, school districts are willing to step up with property tax dollars when necessary. In our area, when that decision was made, High Five programs, which is what they're called in Minneapolis, were just slashed. And now they only serve the farthest behind kids. Minneapolis has very compelling actual evidence based on school progress of kids who were in it and kids that weren't. And it really shows that it does make a huge difference in terms of those kids getting off to a good start, particularly some of our English language learners who have no English speaking at home, people with developmental delays who with a little extra help can catch up with their peers. This is not an urban program at all. It is really the 14 school districts are all throughout the state, and not knowing where all of you are from in terms of the names of the school districts, I'll just quickly read off the 14. Minneapolis, St. Paul, Robbinsdale, Cloquet, Bemidji, Wadena, Deer Creek, Hibbings, Hopkins, Thief River Fall, Perham, Esco, Mesabi East, Carlton, and St. James. And with that, I will just stand for questions.
Any questions? Any testimony from the audience? Okay, we did hear these bills in the subcommittee. So thank you, Representative Loeffler. House Bill 1082 will be laid aside for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, and I'd like to say that Representative Dominguez is a wonderful committee, and it was great fun to be there.
He does.
Well, I don't know about that.
Representative Dominguez, would you like to move the subcommittee report for your bill?
I sure would, Madam Chair. I'd like to move.
All right. All in favor of the subcommittee report for House File 396, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The report is adopted. Representative Dominguez, you're on. If you want to do yours from there, or you could go up to the table.
I think I prefer to stay here. My bill is House File 396.
Representative Dominguez moves House File 396 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Dominguez.
This is the school extension time bill revenue increase.
Okay. And
I think we heard it several times.
We've heard it several times. Questions from members. Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, Madam Speaker, Madam Chair. I must be getting tired. I just called in the speaker.
It's catchy, I guess.
Representative Dominguez, in this bill, are we relinking the formula?
Representative Dominguez.
I think so, Madam Chair.
Mr. Crowe,
I should, excuse me.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, yes, and when this program was created, it was set with a fixed formula amount that wasn't linked directly to the basic formula amount. It was set at that time as the amount the formula was, but it wasn't set to float up. As that formula changed and the bill is drafted, does link the extended time formula amount to the basic formula amount.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Any testimony from the audience? All right. House File 396 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you. Is Representative Dabney in the room? Representative Hillstrom's bill. Representative Dominguez, would you like to move adoption of your committee report for House File 486?
I sure would, Madam Chair.
Okay. House File 489. Representative Dominguez moves the adoption of House File 489 committee report. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The report is adopted. Representative Hillstrom, if you would move your bill. I'll let you say the number.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 489 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Hillstrom moves House File 489 for possible inclusion. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This is a bill that would give aid to schools that are not making adequate yearly progress. It's for supplemental staff development, and it must be allocated for this training, and the plan has to be adopted by the school board. We did make an amendment to it to narrow the number of schools based on the targets that we thought we were going to be getting, and so I would ask for your consideration.
Madam Chair.
Any questions? Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have nothing further, and at the end of the day, when we find out what our spending is going to be, we can ultimately decide what the words are going to be.
Very good. I just have one more question. Representative Garofalo.
You can move the, Madam Chair, it's a process question. On the bills that we don't have fiscal notes on, should they be included in the omnibus bill? I am assuming that at that time we would have a fiscal breakdown on those bills. Is that a correct statement?
Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, yeah, anything that we include in the omnibus bill is going to have an appropriation link to it, so the appropriation will show the fiscal cost of the bill.
Don't mean to throw sand in the gears, Madam Chair, just asking. Thanks.
Representative Garofalo, even the Democrats have to account for every little. All right, Representative Hillstrom has moved House File 489, and it will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney. Okay, and while he's coming down, there's two Representative Dabney bills. Representative Dominguez, would you like to move adoption of your committee report for House File 1086?
I'd like to move House File 1086, ma'am.
Okay, are there any discussion on that report? Okay. All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the report is adopted. Representative Dabney, House File 1086.
Thank you. Representative, Madam Chair and members, I would like to point out that...
Representative Dabney, could you move your bill?
Oh, I thought that had all been taken care of. I'd like to move House File 1086 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Dabney moves House File... We adopted the committee report. Representative Dabney moves House File 1086 for possible inclusion. Representative Dabney.
All right, however these motions started out. I'm not sure what version of the bill that members have. I just want to assure that they have the clarifying amendment for page 2, line 34. When this was originally drafted, it was drafted for four-year-olds, which was not the intent. It's except that it is an extended kindergarten opportunity. It's one of two strategies you'll hear about today to allow school districts to bring incoming kindergartners in earlier, keep them a little bit later. I guess it's possible that if your birth date is August 28th, you're going to still be four if they bring you in 4 weeks early. But the intent was not a four-year-old who's a year away from kindergarten, but perhaps a four-year-old who's a month away from kindergarten. So the clarifying language simply limits it down to children who will be eligible for kindergarten the immediate fall. What I've heard in talking to members here and being present in committee hearings, both in E12 policy and here, is a desire to, a real passion and commitment this year to close the achievement gap, to look at what works, and to get the biggest bang for the taxpayers' dollar. And looking at experiences, particularly in New Mexico, but also hearing from the Minneapolis Public Schools, the Austin Public Schools, and elsewhere, what we know works and is a cost-effective investment is bringing kindergartners in earlier when they at risk and giving them the opportunity to adjust, to have more academic time on task, and to, when we're targeting at-risk students, to get to the same level as their peers and even higher, which is the experience in New Mexico, particularly under my other bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Dabney. Any questions? Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It isn't a question, but this proposal, I think, is really efficient with money and time. And for those, if this committee would decide to go with all-day, everyday kindergarten, there are some districts that can't access this. So I really appreciate the fact that you bring this bill forward, because this would be another option. If you don't have the space to go to all-day, everyday kindergarten, this is still a way to help close that achievement gap, get those children from low-income homes in before school starts.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Any testimony? House File 1086 is laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Dominguez, would you like to move your committee subcommittee report for House File 1426?
I would like to move House File 1426.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the report is adopted. Representative Dabney, you can move the final bill of the day.
Oh, my word. If you could tell me how to move the final bill. Am I moving that the committee report be...
Just remove it like you would any other time. House File 1420. I'll move House File 1426 for possible inclusion. Representative Dabney, I had to learn that, too, if you remember.
You were complaining earlier in the day that you were having some struggles today, Madam Chair. Members, this is a New Mexico model for targeting, again, at-risk incoming kindergartners and bringing them up to equal to, or the New Mexico results are equal to or even better than their non-kindergarten plus peers. This is the Kindergarten Plus program. It was first implemented in New Mexico coming out of the 2003 legislative session. They identified four school districts required that the school sites be 85% poverty or higher, brought the students in 4 weeks early, kept them 4 weeks later. It was so successful, the program, that by 2005, it was a three-year pilot. By the 2 years into the program, the legislature authorized more school sites around the state to be involved. And what the preliminary data is showing is that these Kindergarten Plus students are on track to do as well or even better
than their non-kindergarten plus peers. I cold called the elementary curriculum director in the Las Cruces, New Mexico school district, because Las Cruces is one of the districts that has been implementing the Kindergarten Plus program, and I told her who I was and what I was trying to do, and she said, "Oh, wonderful. You won't regret it at all. It's the best thing we do." And then went on to tell me that it's being seen as so successful a model in New Mexico that this year the legislature there is considering a school plus program that would take the same 20 days and 20 days, I think of it as wings on the kindergarten year, allowing the kids to fly up, from kindergarten to through fourth grade to, again, target at-risk students, provide them extra academic time, and help them close the achievement gap. Not just improve their standing, but actually close the achievement gap.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. I wish we'd had one of the staff photographers here to catch you flying down there.
We can stage it at some other time.
I think we can. You might be flying again before the session. any questions? Representative Dominguez.
Madam Chair, I was just wondering if Representative Dabney set up a tour for us in La Cruz, New Mexico.
Representative Dominguez, if he does, we want to hear about it because we really might like his bill. Representative Dabney?
Madam Chair, what is the district's, what is the committee's budget?
Any other questions? Any testimony? Representative Dabney?
I would just reinforce on this bill the same message that Representative Dietrich was good enough to deliver unprompted on the last bill. This is a very efficient use of monies. Really, all we're paying for here is teacher salary. The benefits are already being paid for. The building is already there. So it's an incremental increase in cost to the state with a significant potential upside benefit to the children and the state. I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Even Democrats like efficient and inexpensive programs.
Whether Representative Demmer believes that or not.
House File 1426 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Have a nice weekend. The meeting is adjourned.